Okay, we are starting the Sefer Kiddushin today, our last Masechet in Nashim. And then we're going to have, it's the last one in Nashim, right at the end. Okay, we'll talk a little bit about the placement of it in a minute, and we'll start with Refuah Shleimot. Devorah bat Dina, Oz Avraham Shimon ben Chana, Karmi bat Di'ima, Orli Pnina bat Rachel, Frida Chaya, Malka Esther bat Zipporah, Daniel bat Mirim Chaya, Ruth, Yosef ben Rachel, Leah bat Rivka, Rachel Yisroel, Falak ben Bracha Batya, Yael Mirim bat Chaya, Rina Chaya bat Shoshana, Yaakov ben Rosa, Tzvi ben Mela, Talia Rachel bat Tamar Sara, Ve'ilu Nishma Chana bat Atara, Rezal bat Sara. Okay, first question in Masechet Kiddushin is the obvious, why is it, first of all, the last Masechet in Nashim, which you might have thought, in theory, everything is built on Kiddushin, Ketubah, Yevamot, right? Everything we learned, Nazir, or not really Nazir, Nidarim, which then Nazir came, Sota, everything's built on Kiddushin, so why is it at the end and not at the beginning, and why more particularly is Gittin before Kiddushin? By the way, in looking at the Rambam in the beginning of in his Hakdamah, the Perush HaMishnah, he talks about the order of Masechtot, and I didn't notice until today he has a different order for Gittin comes before Sota, which is just interesting that he has a different order. And okay, so I'm trying to figure out what order to start in. Anyway, I'll throw out this one first. There's a shita that claims that, this is Rav Reuven Margaliot in this book called Yesod HaMishnah V'Arichata. He claims that the whole order of the Mishnayot has to do with numbers, the number of prakim. I've never mentioned this before, although I've seen it before, that it goes from longest Masechet to shortest Masechet. So it goes in order of how many prakim. Yevamot had the most, then Ketubot, and it works throughout. I didn't check all of them, although I remember we have this, it's called the Mishnah Sedurah. It's a version of Mishnayot, and there he has a list of all, like, the how many prakim are in each one, and I think it actually holds true in everything. I can't remember if there's any exceptions to it, but that all starim are ordered by how many prakim, and that's why Kiddushin has four prakim only, so that's why it's the last Masechet. Okay, that's an interesting approach, which has absolutely nothing to do with the content, which would be an interesting, it would be more a mathematical answer. Okay, let's go to the other extreme. In this book called Yosef Da'at, it's a Perusha Masechet Gittin, he says, Al derech hamilitza ne'emar, okay, like a quip, let's say, to say, Shomrim lo la'adam lefnei shonesei isha, they tell a person before he gets married, La'olam adele p'tucha lefenecha li'itna take mikesher zo. Just know that there's an out, right? This isn't forever. Okay? Ve'ein chirutcha nitele mimcha al yado. Okay, and you're not, you know, this is always the fear of people, right? I'm going to be stuck in something. So, you know, you're not going to lose your freedom. Here it even says in parentheses, Shaloka otan de'ot nichzavot me'uot ha'olam. And there are certain religions that don't allow divorce. Yidi'a makdimazo, and then at least they put a positive spin on it, that knowing this merosh gives you the confidence that you can go into the relationship, in other words, and is the proper basis for a solid relationship. And that's why Gittin comes before Kiddushin, so that you know that there's a way out, that Kiddushin or not, Sophie.
Like a prenup comes before.
Right, maybe like a prenup. Okay, I could say that. Okay, there's another reason given, which is kind of a strange reason, which is, it says, here, right, this is the Rambam. The Rambam's reason is a little strange. He says that it's Lefi Seder HaKatuv in the Torah, which is strange, because what does the Torah say? Okay, well, I'll say this pasuk, okay, this is the pasuk we're going to base our shiur on today. Ki yikach, okay, we've talked about this before, but again, maybe some people are joining right now, so I'll talk about it again from the beginning. The psukim that talk about marriage and divorce in the Torah are all just a lead-in to that once you're, if you divorce someone and she marries someone else, and then he dies or divorces her, you can't remarry her, okay? That's the whole topic of those few psukim is to get to that. Okay, but from there we learn all the laws of Kiddushin and all the laws of Gerushin, and it's all, if this were to happen, blah blah blah, and that were to happen, then you would, okay, so here's the pasuk. Ki kach ish isha uva'ala, if a man takes a woman and sleeps with her, v'hayam lo timtzachem be'enav, if she doesn't find favor in his eyes, ki matzah ba'ervat avar, that was all yesterday's stuff, because he found some erva or davar, or maybe ervat davar, right? That was the machlokes of Shammai Beit Hillel. V'katav la sefer kri tu v'natam biyadav shulchan mibeito. And then the pasuk says, v'yatzah mibeito v'halcha v'hayta li'ish acher. So comes the Rambam and he says, look, what does it say? After she gets divorced and then she goes and marries someone else. So that pasuk orders it, even though really the first pasuk started off with marriage. It went marriage, divorce, marriage. But he says, for some reason, he ignores the beginning pasuk, and he says, since it says that she gets divorced and then gets remarried, maybe the word v'hayta l'ish acher is also, we always talked about havayaz lashon kiddushin, and that maybe that's more the pasuk, although you're going to see that they learn all the laws of kiddushin from ki yikach ish isha, the very beginning of the pasuk. So that's what the Rambam says. Okay, he claims that that's the, and also if you remember from that pasuk, we darshan that we markish havaya le yitziyah. That just, right, there's a lot of laws that are true for gerushin. We learn from there to kiddushin, all sorts of things. So he says, look at that pasuk. It has the gerushin and then the kiddushin, and that's why. So again, not the strongest answer. Okay. I think that's basically, there's one more here. So then the Chatam Sofer on Masechet Gittin also has an interesting pirush. He says here, the Sidir Gittin ben k'tuvot l'kiddushin. Arameis hen yishalach ishet ishto. Okay, now remember, we talked about this yesterday, and we'll talk about it again today, that there's some connection underlying about the relationship between God and Bnei Israel and the relationship between marriage. And we know from all the narrative of what's going to happen in history, the Jews are going to leave God, but then they're going to come back. Okay? So that it's a remez. What he's saying is, Achara gerushin yiyelan kiddushin chidushin ad ve'erastich li la'olam. Okay? So that the idea is that even if the marriage breaks, even if there's a divorce, there's always a way to bring it back together. And again, here they're using the imagery of God and Bnei Israel, quoting from the Be'erastich li la'olam from Hosea, about that ultimately there's going to be, you know, a perfect marriage between God and the Jews. It will last forever, even if there's some breakup along the way. And that's also, it ends with Kiddushin. Almost you can think about it, we had all these complicated masechtot, problematic, you know, like whether it's the Ketubah, where there were disagreements about the Ketubah, and then there's Gittin, and there's Sota. But ultimately, the idea is we end with Kiddushin, and this is like a nice way to end this, that we end with Kiddushin, that ultimately even broken up relationships will end with Kiddushin. Okay, right, but we know that's not necessarily the truth, but the case always, but that's another approach. Okay, as always, questions better than the answer. Okay, Haisha nikneh b'shalosh drachim, an incredibly problematic Mishnah, okay, for women particularly learning this. The woman, okay, there's actually a debate in Tosfot about why it has hey hayidiyah. Why is it the woman and not Isha nikneh b'shalosh drachim? Why is it Haisha? I'm not going to get into all the answers there, but then he quotes some cases where it says it with hey hayidiyah, other Mishnayot, some where it doesn't have it. Anyway, the woman is acquired in three ways, okay? Obviously, what's the problem here, right? It's all that the woman is passive, right? She gets acquired. We're going to have a whole discussion in the Mishnah, why in the Gemara, why it doesn't say Ha'ish Mekadesh, right? It could have said Ha'ish Mekadesh. In fact, if you look ahead, the second parak starts Ha'ish Mekadesh, okay? Where the man is the one doing it. Here, the woman is passive, although she's mentioned. Okay, but obviously, what's the problem? It sounds like she's acquired, like she's bought, like a, okay, and you're going to even be more disturbed because the next thing is ha'eved nikneh in how many ways, and ha'beheimah nikneh in how many ways. So, you know, it's kind of equating her with all sorts of other objects that are acquired. You know, when I was teaching in high school, that was the first mission that always bothered everybody. In fact, one of the reasons I always said I'm not going to teach Kiddushin in high school was you don't want to start up getting the girls all riled up about, you know.
My friend Shabbat, she came after the animal.
Right, that's true. That's true. The behema was listed first in Shabbat. Yeah, Fasha Shabbat is pointing out there was Bameh, behema yotze. That's it, and Bameh Isha yotze. Okay, so here she's first. Part of it, you know, my response is always, you have to remember, the Mishnayot were recited Baal Peh in terms of her being connected with the Eved and the behema. Once they're discussing this whole they recited them orally, pass them down that way so people will remember them. And when Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi put them together, he put these things that had nothing to do with each other, but were connected linguistically. Okay, I'll give you the other really obvious example, the Ein Beins, if you remember from Megillah. Ein Bein, this to that, except this. Ein Bein, this to that, except this. Okay, it started with Adar Rishon and Sheni, and it went off to Shabbos and Yantif, which at least was somewhat connected, to Mudar Hana'am Echaveiro, to like all sorts of other topics, because it all was, there's no difference between this and that except for one thing. So, that being said, it's very likely that once we were talking about Kinyanim, there was a whole Masechet Kinyanim, so to speak, and it got put here in Kiddushin because the woman was the first one, and therefore it got mentioned here. It doesn't necessarily mean that the woman's equated with the Eved and the Behema, although we do see, you know, like in Berchot HaShachar, you know, there's the Eved, the Goy, and the Isha. They are somewhat linked, and they are linked in all sorts of other places, although bless the Behema than the Isha and the Eved. Okay, and the other question that we're really going to deal with a lot, which is going to come up kind of in each Masechet, has its undertones of different views, like, let's say, is there Zika or not Zika, we saw or is Sukkah Misha Mechitza, or... why am I blanking now? Is it Machitza or, no, not Sukkah, Eruvin. Is it like a separation or is it I forget. Anyway, we saw this in a bunch of underlying different Masechta, that there's Machlokot, you know, how to understand things in different sugyot fall in different places. How do we view this Kinyan? Is this a Kinyan like any other Kinyan? Okay, is it, okay, you buy something and you acquire it and it's yours. Or, and it seems more likely in this case, there's something in addition to the Kinyan. It's not your typical Kinyan, it's an atypical Kinyan. And it also has an added element of Ishut related, right? That there's actually a machloket among the Rishonim. The Rosh really talks about this as if it's exactly you acquire. It's a Kinyan, just like anything else. But there's other opinions that say, no, there's something more than that. And it's not only is there something more than that, it's not exactly the same type of Kinyan. And then plus, there's this issue of Ishut, of a relationship. And it's not totally parallel. And here, obviously, one of the differences is that she's, first of all, she has to be a willing participant. We've talked about this before. In order to get married, she has to be a willing partner. She has to be interested, as opposed to in Gittin, which we saw according to the Talmud, she doesn't need to be. And therefore, there's also, right, it's not like you're buying an object and the object just comes into your hands, right? There's a human being there and she has her own will. And that's why, interestingly enough, in this Mishnah, it starts off with how she's acquired and then it talks about how she's konat atzma, how she buys back her freedom from this kinyan. Okay, so it's not just about her being bought, but also how does she get out of it? Konat atzma b'shtei drachim. Okay, so she's acquired in three ways, and she buys herself back in two ways. Okay, now the Mishnah is now going to elaborate on this. By the way, this is also a very typical Mishnah in terms of, there's many Mishnayot, particularly in the beginning of a Masechtot, that lay out numbers, like Arba'a Avot Nizikim, and then it says what they are. It's kind of like the number system that we just said a few minutes ago about the Mishnayot, how many Prakim, and it's a little mathematical. The Mishnah likes to say, or Shtayim Yitziot Chein Arba, right, in Shabbat. There's all sorts of Mishnayot, especially in the beginning of Masechtot, where it gives numbers. So here it's telling you, three ways she's acquired, she buys herself back in two ways. We're going to see that they're very not parallel, the ways that she gets acquired and the way she buys herself back, or somewhat not parallel. You could already see it's not parallel, it's 3 verses 2. Okay. Niknet bekesef bishtaru bibia. So we've learned many times. She's acquired in three ways, either by money, by a document, or by having sexual relations. Now in all these cases, it has to be, right, it's not just that they have sex and then they're married, it has to be bi'ah al-shem kiddushin, okay, where he even says, possibly, might even need to say, harayat mekudesh li bi'ah zo, and then bi'ah zo, and then they have sex. Or b'shtar, it has to say, harayat mekudesh li, you know, in the shtar. And the kesef, we know, that's how we do it nowadays with something that's worth kesef, right, it's worth money. We purchase with a tabat. I mentioned recently that I was at a wedding in Italy where they used, it was a Syrian wedding, and they used a coin. And then they had to ask the chief rabbi of Italy. They weren't from Italy. And yeah, there was a whole question, can you actually use a coin? Which is funny because here it seems clear it's a coin. But obviously in practice, people generally don't use that. But some people do.
From the very beginning, was it all three or was it or?
Ah, yafeh. Okay, so there's a bit of a discussion about this in the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi asks, maybe we need all three. And that would actually support the opinion of those who say that this isn't a typical kinyan, and there's different elements. There's an ishut element, and maybe that's why you need bi'ah. And there's a, okay, so the Yerushalmi raises that as a havamina, but rejects it. Nobody thinks that you actually need all three, but interestingly enough, the Yerushalmi does ask that question that you just asked, Shoshana.
So if you parallel it to the, how does she get out?
Right. If you parallel, it's clear she gets out only in one of those ways. Right. And we don't really see other kinyanim where you require two. I don't think there's other kinyanim where you require two. It's a good question, actually, whether you do. But anyway, there's a discussion about it.
You need a star and kesef, no?
What?
Like if you acquire a piece of land.
A piece of land.
A star and a kesef.
Well, it's not. You do pay kesef, but you don't need the the guy won't sell it to you, but it's not part of the kinyan. The kesef doesn't affect the kinyan. Okay, when you actually acquire it, it's with the shtar or with some sort of a hug. There's different methods. Although, what Seth mentioned on Friday night was that sometimes we do a number of kinyanim, but I don't know that you need to do that. That's often to cover your bases, let's say. But I don't think I'm not sure if there's kinyanim that actually require two acts. Okay, so now there's a whole question about kesef. Is it kesef, or can it be shvei kesef? And first of all, does kesef mean actual silver, or does kesef mean a coin? And when we say it means, let's say, a coin, that means a coin is just a symbol of a monetary amount. Is it shvei kesef? Is that the same? Interestingly enough, there's a whole discussion about it in other cases. Is shvei kesef like kesef, but not by isha? So there's a machloket rishonim, obviously, based on that. Is it that we just learn it from Pidyon Eved Ivri, that there it talks about using Shvei Kesef? Or do we say that since it's Beretzon HaIsha, and that she has to be willing, then obviously she'll take, if she takes Shvei Kesef, then obviously that's okay for her. And then, therefore, you don't need a special limud to prove it. But anyway, there's a discussion, a whole discussion about Shvei Kesef, whether you need a limud or not, whether it is relevant, it's not relevant. Okay, now we're going to talk about Bekesef. We have an interesting machloket Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. I say interesting because the gap between them is very wide. Usually the gap between two opinions is not usually so wide. Here the gap is very wide. Bekesef, okay, here the Mishnah is already defining something it talked about. Beit Shammai Amrim b'dinar u'b'shvei dinar. It's a dinar, or here now it talks about the shaveh, or the worth of a dinar. Beit Hillel Amrim b'pruta u'b'shaveh pruta. Okay? Now, interestingly enough, two things happen now. So one is, kamahi pruta. So first of all, the Gemara only asks, it doesn't ask how much is a dinar. First of all, we've learned before there's a dinar kesef and a dinar zahav. They just assume we know which dinar they're talking about. The Mepharshim will say it's a dinar kesef, which is worth 1/25 of a dinar zahav. Okay, so it's much less. But we're going to see that this dinar is worth way more than a pruta. Okay, that we'll see in a minute. It doesn't say so inside, but first we have to see what a pruta is. A pruta is a chamish shmona b'isar italki. Okay, again, they assume we know what an isar italki is. Okay, it's 1/8 of an isar italki. And if you look, I printed out here a chart from Frank. Frank has a book about, it's a dictionary, the practical Talmud dictionary, I think it's called. The one with the aleph on the front and the tuf on the back, multicolored, if you've seen it. He has a list of the comparisons. You can also look in the Rishonim, they talk about it. But a pruta is 192 dinarim. A dinar is 192 prutot, which means, a silver dinar is 192. Okay, so you're talking big difference between the value. Okay, Beit Shammai thinks it has to be something with real value. And Beit Hillel thinks it has to have value, but not very much value. Okay, and that's what we paskin like. Why the Gemara only asks what's a pruta? Okay, some Rishonim say because we paskin like Beit Hillel. We don't really care so much what Beit Shammai's opinion is because we don't paskin that way. Or it could be just everybody knew what a dinar was and a pruta wasn't as clear. You know, pruta sounds like you're saying a coin, almost like it could be any coin. In other words, it's not clear. It's almost like saying a cent in English. A cent could be a cent from a dollar. It could be a cent from some other matbea. A cent is just, it's a general term, so maybe that's why that needed defining and the other one didn't. Okay, so we have a machloket again. Like I said, we pass them like Beit Shammai. We're going to talk later about cases, whether it was something, was it Shavah Pruta. We saw it a few days ago, that he, with the dates, you know, the stuff from the inside of the dates that he married her with, and then they said, oh, well, it wasn't a Shavah Pruta, and therefore it's not a good marriage. V'koneh atzma beget v'mitat ha'ba'al. How does she get herself back? Either by a get or by her husband's death. Okay, pretty straightforward. V'hayivama, now we're going to compare the Isha to the Yivama. Hayivama niknet, okay, what's a Yivama? Again, for those who are joining now, I'll explain a little better. When a husband dies without children, the brother has to marry the wife in order, lahakim et shem hamet, to keep the name, perpetuate the name of the dead husband, and he has to marry the woman. But now, how does, we've learned this when we learned Yivamot, how does the Yibum get affected? Not by a marriage ceremony, like a betrothal, like we have in Kiddushin, okay? But he niknet bibia, only by bia, okay? So until they have sexual relations, they haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. Now, we did learn that Midah Rabbanan, there was something called Ma'amar, which was like the tekes of Erusin, or Kiddushin, as we call it. And that's, but that's only effective to say, I'm the brother who's going to marry her, no one else is, but it's actually not a kiyum of the yibum. So until they actually sleep together, yibum is not affected. V'koneh atzma b'chalitza u'b'mitat hayabam. Okay, either he dies or she does chalitza. Now the mitat yabam is a little complicated because if there's other brothers, then obviously she could do the other brothers. But if there's no one left and the last one dies, then she's p'turah. Okay, the other thing I want to mention here, which I should have started with, is also about what the Kiddushin is. We've talked about this before, but again, I'll repeat it. Kiddushin is the first step, which we do under the chuppah. They would do about a year before, where they would do Kiddushin, which is basically saying, you are now, this woman was able to marry anybody she wanted, now you're forbidden to everybody, including the person who she's marrying. And then with the Nisuin, when he brings her, so to speak, into his house, that's the symbolism of the chuppah, knisat tachat chuppah. When she goes into the chuppah with him, which there's different opinions as to when that's affected. Is it ichud? Is it, you know, just standing under the chuppah? But then there's the Nisuin, where then she becomes mutar to that man. Okay, so right now we're talking about niknet. The kinyan is actually done at the kiddushin, at the earlier stage of the erusin. We talked about that there's certain things that start ticking then, and there's certain things that don't. Like, there was a whole thing, right? When does she start eating truma, and when does he have to write her a ketubah, right? The ketubah really only has to be written before the marriage, although some people did write it earlier, but, okay, there's all sorts of things about what starts ticking when. Okay, now before we start the Gemara, I have to preface with one thing. We've talked about this also in the beginning of Masechtot. Often beginning of Masechtot have a different style. This one is particularly noticeable than the rest of the Masechet. Often it's later additions to the Gemara, meaning after the time of the Tanaim, from about 500 to 800, there was this tkufa called the Sforaim or the Stamaim, because they appear without names, so Stam. And they added their notes on the side, and they ended up in the printed edition of the Gemara. And it has a whole different style. Some of it's going to be like, well, what are you talking about? Okay, so be prepared. We're going to get into some grammar that clearly doesn't... If my high school grammar teacher, who was really makpida, you know, she wouldn't be happy with the sugya. But anyway, we're gonna talk about now the really... pulling apart the Mishnah in all sorts of interesting ways, or maybe less interesting than general Gemara is. Ha'isha niknet. Ma'ishna ha'cha detane ha'isha niknet, u'ma'ishna ha'tam detane ha'ish mekadesh. So the first question, right, it's looking structurally at the Mishnayot. Why does it say here ha'isha niknet? And the second paragraph starts ha'ish mekadesh. Okay, whereas, notice two differences, right? One is focusing on the woman versus the man. And one is focusing on the terminology, right? The terminology is a kinyan, acquiring. And the other terminology is kiddushin, right? Lekadesh, which first of all, we're going to see what the root of kiddushin, why is kiddushin discussed here, right? Why is it called kiddushin, right? Why isn't it called erusin, like we would call it? So why, what's the difference? So what do they say? Mishum dekabai lemitne kesef. They wanted to teach us that one of the ways she's, you can affect kiddushin. Let's say we want to use the terminology mikadesh. Okay, it could have said ha'isha mikudeshet b'shlosha drachim. So they say, why did they just say that? So they say, since one of the methods is kesef, So they wanted to talk about it in the terminology that matches kesef, which is kinyan. So now they say, bekesef minale, so how do we know that you can get married with kesef? Gamar kicha kicha misdei Ephron. We learn the word, okay, what's this exereshava? We take the same word, appears twice. We can say what's true for one is true for the other. So where does it say kicha? When Avraham buys the sadeh of Ephron in Maran HaMachpelah, it says k'tiv hacha. So our pasuk is k'tiv hacha ki kach ish isha, where it's talking about marriage, kicha. U'k'tiv hatam natati kesef hasadeh kach mimeni. Okay, so he says, right, take from me the kesef. Okay, so therefore, just like kesef, their kicha comes with kesef, here kicha could also come with kesef. And now, how do you know, though, that there he actually acquired the sadeh, that there was a kinyan? Because we talked about before, I mentioned before, that kesef doesn't necessarily affect a kinyan. So how do we know that there it affected a kinyan? The kicha ikre kinyan dichtiv ha-sadeh asher kana Avraham. There it says, the sadeh that Avraham bought. Now, that's in a different parak already, okay? One is from Kaf Gimel and one is from Kaf Hei, but obviously it's referring back to the one that he bought. That where, how did he buy it? With kesef. So there you see that you can have a kinyan with kesef. And there you see that it says kach, and it says yikach by us. So therefore, kesef can be one of the ways you can kach. You can lakach isha with kesef. So now they say, or alternatively, you could use a different pasuk to show that kesef can affect a kinyan, which is maybe in a sense a better pasuk. Inami sidot bekesef yiknu. Okay, here it says they bought fields with kesef. Notice, by the way, they're and Tosfos points this out. They're only bringing pasukim to talk about acquiring fields with money. Okay, not acquiring other things with kesef. The other thing is, it says, this pasuk is better than the Ephron pasuk. Why is it better? Because the Ephron achiti pasuk said kach bekesef in one pasuk, and the other pasuk just said that asher kana, but it didn't say kana bekesef. In other words, we're connecting two pasukim together to say the kinyan was bekesef, but maybe in theory he bought it some other way and it just didn't mention it in the pasuk. So that's why they bring this pasuk. But the weakness of this one is it doesn't say kach in this pasuk, and we wanted to use the kach, so therefore that's a weakness in this one. Now they say, Tnei ha'isha niknet, v'nitnei hatam ha'ish koneh. So fine, so we understand why here you need kinyan, because we wanted to talk about the kesef. But if that's the case, so in the next paragraph, when it talked about ha'ish, it should have just said ha'ish koneh. Why did it say ha'ish mekadesh? So now they're going to talk about linguistics, okay? Me'ikara tane lishna de'oraita, ulevasof tane lishna de'rabanan. It's very common, by the way, that there's certain words that are used in the Torah, and there's different words to describe the same things that are used in the rabbi's time, okay? When I took a course in Aramit Bavlit, I remember we talked about this Lashon Chachamim and there's Lashon Torah. You know, it's different. It was a different dialect almost, right? There were different words used. So if you notice, right, what are they saying here? So the Torah used the word Yikach, but the rabbis always talk about it as Kiddushin. So therefore, they started off the Masechet, okay, this is again a very Sfora'i answer. They start off the Masechet with the talk of the Torah. Then they move on to the talk of the rabbis. Okay. Umay lishna d'rabanan de'asar la'akulei alma kehekdesh. Umay lishna d'rabanan. Why did the rabbis change it? Why didn't they keep with the lashon of kicha? Now here it really gets to the dual aspect of marriage. That number one, there is an acquiring of the husband of the wife. But, by the way, I didn't mention this, but what's a main difference between acquiring a woman and acquiring an eved? We've seen this before. That when he acquires the eved, what do we say? Gufo kanoilo. His body is sold to the husband. The woman, we talked about before, remember we tried to make this kavachomer, we said, but the woman, she has her own freedom. She's not, even though, yes, she's tied down to him and married, but she's free for, yes, her ma'aseh yadayim, right? Her proceeds go to the husband, but her body itself doesn't belong to him, okay? And that's an important distinction to make. So even if we look at it as a kinyan, there's a clear, the Gemara clearly talks about that she's not really owned by him. Even though, you know, in certain ways, she's somewhat owned by him, but she's not fully owned by him. So now they say, so why do the rabbis call it kiddushin? De'aser le'akuleyama kehektesh. He forbids her to all others like Hekdesh. In other words, once she's married to him, right, that's what we said, the Kiddushin, answer her to everyone else, she's kind of like Hekdesh. And here we again have that imagery of connecting it to the Kodesh of God, right, the relationship between God, that there's holiness here. And that she's unique to him in that, right, as opposed to he acquires her and she belongs to him, so to speak, but it's also the aspect that she's forbidden to all others. She's treated like Hekdesh, almost right, and here it's a... On the one hand, it's talking about ownership of the husband over the wife. It's not exactly a positive image of the woman. On the other hand, it's kind of that she's special, right? Like Hekdesh. Hekdesh is something we think of as something special. It's elevated to a higher level, a status. It's almost like she's elevated to a higher status in his eyes, right? Because she's only for him and not for anybody else. Okay, so again, you can look at it negatively and positively, any way you want to look at it, but there is some sort of positive aspect there. So why doesn't it say there, ha'ish koneh? Mishum dekabai lemitne seifa, I'm sorry, why doesn't it say here? Right? If we're going to say, okay, so we start with kinyan, we move to hekdesh, right? We move to kiddushin. Fine, we got that. We start with Torah, we move to rabbis. But why now we're getting to, why doesn't it say ha'ish koneh, like ha'ish mekadesh, and have it all parallel? So now I say, Mishum de kabayla mine seifa, they wanted to say at the end of our Mishnah, v'koneh et atzma. V'koneh et atzma bedida. There the subject is herself. She buys herself out. So therefore, tana nami resha bedida. Therefore, also the resha should be, you know, the subject is her, because it makes sense to say the end as her. So then they say, what do you mean? You could also say the end is him. You could say, v'nidne ha'ish koneh umakneh. Right? You could say, he buys her in three ways, and he gives her rights to herself, right? He's makneh to her in two ways. So now what's the problem with saying that? Because what are the two ways? One is he actually does it himself, which is the get, but the other one is he dies, which he obviously has no control over, so therefore you can't really say he was makneh. Certainly he's not alive anymore. So that's what the Gemara is going to say. Mishum de'ika mitat habal delav iuka makneh min shamayahu de makneh la. In other words, there it's mishamayim. It's not his, right? He didn't kill himself, let's say. I mean, he could have, but it's unlikely, right?
So
most cases.
It's not because of the wife's influence either.
Right, it's not because of the wife's influence. It wasn't to get rid of the wife, per se, that he did it, exactly, to untie her from the bond.
No, I'm saying also the wife doesn't have control over whether her husband dies. So to make her the subject is also problematic.
But it's again, how she gets herself back. She gets her freedom back. You're right that she has no control over each of them. But each one was done somehow, and from both get and death are equal, at least in terms of her, whereas the man can only affect one and not the other. But in terms of her getting herself back, she gets herself back in those two ways, even though you're right, she has zero control over either way. Okay, v'ibay deima, itane kone, if it said, ha'ish kone, hava amina afilu ba'al korcha. Right, you want the woman to, okay, and this is really, I think, the real reason. You want the woman to appear here. In other words, you don't want it to be, especially if the whole concern is it's going to look like a kinyan, that, oh, he buys her and that's the end of the story. The woman has to be present here. This all has to do with her, right? And what are they saying here? If you had said kone, you might have thought that it's against her will. Tana ha'isha nikneh demidat ha'in shelo midat ha'lo. Particularly since the man is the one affecting everything here, we want you to make sure that you know that the woman has some part in this. Because again, she could say, I'm not interested, and there won't be a wedding. Okay? So therefore, she has to appear here so that you know that she has presence. Okay? It's almost, it would be, right? It's bothersome that it starts off, Haisha Niknid, and it's all about how she gets acquired. But it would be much more bothersome if she didn't appear at all. And it would just be, Ha'ish Kodeh V'Shalosh Drachim, and, you know, that would be very bothersome even more so. So here they're saying the woman needs to have presence here because she does have presence in the ceremony, even if it's low-key presence, right? And even if it's that she just has to agree, but it's still considered something. And therefore, they wanted to say her name. And maybe that's also why it has the ha-yidia, ha-isha. Now, this is giving her significance. Isha is just random. But ha-isha, like b'mei isha yotza, right? That's just, right there, it's not ha-isha, I'm pretty sure. I think it's b'mei isha yotza. So, you know, what's the difference? But here, it's the woman. She has some presence. My area. Now we're going to get into the grammar, okay? And this is going to take us through for the next little while, okay? Not even past today's stuff. Now, what's the issue? If you know grammar, what's the story? Derech is feminine, okay? So now, it says, Aisha niknet b'shalosh drachim, okay? Which is feminine. So now the Gemara is going to say, Umay iria detane shalosh, litne shlosha. Okay, they're going to say, wait a minute, it should be shlosha. Now, why should it be shlosha? It's not grammatically correct. It should be shalosh. That's why I said my grammar teacher would have a field day with this Gemara. Okay, it should be shalosh. So if you look in Rashi, okay, it's a little complicated to understand this. Rashi says, ki orcha de Gemara. And you could say, in general, the default in Hebrew is always zachar. So it should just be the default, which should be shlosha. Okay, it's a little strange, but we're going to accept the question anyway, even though it's a bit of a difficult question. And it's even going to get more complicated because they're going to kind of break down grammar rules. But anyway, what does it say here? Mishum dekabai lemidnei derech. V'derech lashon nekevahu. So now they say, because now here we get our good grammatical answer. Because derech is nekeva, and because derech, right, it's one of those exceptions. Derech sounds like it's zahar, but it's one of those exceptions. Derech is nekeva, and because it's nekeva, and the shalosh is defining the derech, therefore it's nekeva. And how do they prove their grammar? From the Torah. Because here you see, Haderech Asher Yochuba, Baz Nekeva, it's referring to the Derech. There you have it. But then they say, well, that's fine and good, but we have another Mishnah that doesn't follow this rule. Ve'ela, now why is this a silly conversation? Because it's very likely that when they did this, right, they just wrote Gimel. And they didn't write shlosha or shalosh. And someone just wrote, right, shlosha or shalosh, not really knowing Hebrew grammar. So it's a bit of a moot question. But anyway, going with that, they're going to now quote, there's a, I think it's a, yeah, it's a Mishnah. It says detanya, but it really should be detanan. Elaha detanan, because tanan always means learn in the Mishnah. Bishiva drachim bodkin et hazav. And what do you have here? Shiva. Shiva is zachar. Why does it say zachar when it's the same Mishnah, so to speak, right? Shiva drachim bodkin et hazav. What does this mean? This is when you have some sort of discharge. A man has a discharge. They check, if you recall, we learned this with the zav. If there's something particular from the outside that caused it, then we don't consider it zav. Okay, so we check all sorts of things. There's seven things we check to make sure whether it really is zav or not. So nitne sheva, it should say sheva. So now what do they say? Mishum dekabai lemitne derech. V'eshkechan derech deikre lashon zachar dechtiv b'derech echad yetzu alecha u'bishiva drachim yanusu lefanecha. Here we have a pasuk, which is very likely, by the way, what caused the person to make the mistake when they wrote Zayin drachim and they wrote out shiva, because he had in his head the pasuk where it says, this is in the pasuk in the Tochacha, but this is the bracha part of the Tochacha, where in good times, what will happen if everything's good and you listen to the mitzvot? So, b'derech echad yitzu alecha, the enemies will go against you in one way, and in seven ways, you'll chase them away. So, ihachi, now what they're going to say, oh, wait a minute, but now, kashu kray adade, it's sefer, you brought a pasuk to prove that, but now you have two pasukim, one says derech is nikeva, and one says derech is zachar. V'kashinami matnitina hadade, and you have two mishnayot, right? One says zachar, and one says nikeva. So what are you going to do with this? So now what do they answer? Kray hadade lo kashin, don't worry about the pasukim. Hata debitorakai, betora ikre lashon nikeva, dechtiv torat Hashem tmima mishivat nefesh. The first pasuk we saw about the derech was it's behizharta. Okay, it's from Shmot Yuchet. Behizharta etem et hachukim ve et hatorot veodat alem et haderech yochuba. What's the derech? It's not really referring to the word derech. It's referring to what the derech is. What's the derech? Torah, and Torah is nekeva, and that's why it's nekeva. Okay, and hatam to bimilchamakai, and there it's talking about war. And what is war? Oh, war is men, right? War is not women. And didarko shel ish lasam lachama, ve'ein darka shel isha lasam lachama, and therefore, katav la b'lashon zachar. So now what they're saying is, and almost you could think about it, maybe they thought, derech is really, right, it's an exception to the rule. So maybe they thought that there were two maslulim of derech, but derech really, derech is a path. Derech isn't actually anything actual. So maybe derech is referring to what the derech they're talking about. Was it the melchama, or was it the the Torah.
It's
and then the Torah would be...
They're talking about grammar. The milchama is still feminine.
Yes, right. That's also true, right? That's why this isn't really a grammatical discussion. And what they're doing here, I can't really say. I don't really know why they're having a whole discussion about all this. Okay? But what's interesting, if you think about it, what are they really talking about is zachar nekeva, which is kiddushin, zachar nekeva. In other words, they're having this ping pong about male female in words, but maybe also maybe a ping pong about male female. I don't know. It just dawned on me now. I'm trying to think about where to go with it. But it is interesting, notable. Again, you have to remember this is all a later sugya. So also in terms of looking at it in the regular context of things that go on in the Gemara, it's viewed a little differently. It's not the meat and potatoes of the Gemara. Okay, we'll go on a little bit
that's
more.
That's very common in the first Mishnah in the Masechta.
Yes, that's what I said. It's very common in the beginning of Masechta that they go on to these tangents about things like this, and that's why I said most, a lot of this Svar Isugis are the very beginning of Masechta. Okay. Okay, Manitina Adade Lokashyan. So now we have to do the same thing for the Mishnayot. Why is it not... Now, what's going to be the obvious? Hacha de legabe ishakai, arno says the woman. Dik katane lebelashoni kevan. But hatam de legabe ishkai, did our koshal ishli badek, the ain't our koshal ishali badek, tai shanami baonis mitamal, I'll get to this in a second, tane lashon zachar. Okay, so now what's the issue? There, the woman is not the subject. The zav is talking about a male zav. How do we know it's talking about a male zav? That's what we just read. Because in Isha, if she has she has blood when it's not the time of her period, it's called Zava, whether it was Ba'ones or not. Whereas the man, Zav only happens in particular, like if they have some other reason to explain it, it's like Ones, then it's not Zav. So therefore, the Bodkin is only relevant to the man. So therefore, the Zav Mishnah is talking about the man, so it says Lashon Zachar. This Mishnah is obviously talking about the woman, that's the subject, therefore it says Lashon Nekeva. Okay, we're going to stop here tomorrow. We're going to pick up more on this. They're going to say, why does it say drachim? Why does it just say dvarim? And then talk about other. It's going to quote all sorts of other cases where it says drachim, and maybe it should have said dvarim, and why it uses derech. Okay, they're going to have all things about derech. Maybe also, if you think about it, kiddushin is also, it's a derech. It's not a thing. It's not a davar. It's a derech. It's a process. And maybe they're really talking about processes and zahar nekeva relationships, and maybe it's a like an undertone of something more. Think about it more tomorrow.